good evening. And actually more nervous than I I don't know, I wasn't the last time I gave one, and I'll try to keep my voice up too. One thing about public speaking in front of a bunch of Buddhists is you're all actually listening, so that's what. All right, well, so this is my first talk after having been ordained as a core member of the Order of Inner Being for this tradition. And what that means is a commitment to keeping the Sangha alive and Sangha building, and just maintaining the refuge that we have here. And it's open to anybody, and it's not really a denominational entity here. We do have our tradition of in the Vietnamese Zen Buddhist fashion, but we still are open to anybody to come in with whatever practice they're comfortable with. And in addition to it's recognizing our precepts, the 14 mindful trainings. Some people might be more familiar with the 5, and the 14 are just a little more in-depth, and with the transmission or the ordination, it's also a commitment to be a little more diligent with the practice and just going that much step further to be more well rehearsed. So, in speaking of the 14 mindful trainings, the first three actually address our natural tendency towards attachment to our point of view. And the first three are the crux of all 14 in addressing the openness of mind and attachment to views. And the third one is pressing views upon others. It addresses that. And and just kind of acknowledging the length, we just have a natural tendency to persuade or even enforce our beliefs and opinions upon others. And the mentality of my way or the highway is pretty much the antithesis of this practice, and just that mentality is kind of 0 for 3 right off the bat with the first three trainings. So I titled this Nourishing a Mindful Garden. And so internal knots of grasping and attachment to view are root causes to misleading perceptions. And the middle way recognizes how our tendency of clinging to views contributes to creating conditions favorable to suffering. And cultivating a mindful garden establishes a confident mental space favorable to insight that is not clouded by anxiety or the point of view we may be attached to. Acknowledging that attachment to view is a condition of just being human, we are not beyond this default of character, no matter how moral we think we are, or whatever practice give us a validity for, or some sort of justification. We had our annual retreats that we have here. We had a Dharma teacher who has been a couple times, and she is. She gave us the cliff note version of the Eightfold Path is the crap in your life is the compost of your enlightenment. And sometimes this also reminds me of, there's a story, or a short story called Who Ordered This Truckload of Dung? And that's one of the stories in a book of that title. And This one, the solution in this one is kind of finding a wheelbarrow and planting a garden in the backyard before that pile of dung starts to stink, you know? And let's do something about it positive. So regardless of whether I ordered it or who or why it was delivered, it's not always easy to respond gracefully. The positive solution might not be obvious, but eventually it'll start to smell. So the intention of meditation can be compared to cultivating a garden, where we're establishing conditions available to nourishing plants. When I'm working in my garden at home, I consider it more like I'm growing soil, and what I'm doing is creating all the conditions for all the soil critters like worms and centipedes and protozoa and the favorable nematodes and anything that will attract them and make their habitat as environmentally sound for their needs, so that they while they're just being and living in there, they are maximizing their productivity and making the conditions ripe for anything I might plant. And so with these conditions set, whatever is planted is going to grow to that potential. However, the end results of what does grow are out of my control. I've set the conditions right, but it's up to the plant, that each individual one that I've planted, to achieve what they have their potential of and the conditions that I've set for them. So in the end, I know better than to have expectations of what is going to be fruiting in my garden, but in the meantime, I've put those conditions there to maximize that growth. And so as a metaphor to our practice here, when we sit in stillness, we are creating conditions for various thoughts to arise, change, and then pass away. It's an open field we keep coming to every moment. And in stillness, we open the space to see our thoughts and feelings may originate beyond what is on the surface and our conditioned response. In stillness, we can choose what is important to pay attention to and where we generate or act on fear. Meditation is cultivating the mental landscape, so when issues arise, they arrive in a cultivated field, open and peaceful, where we can respond in a skillful manner and not be in some sort of restricted, panicky mode and making unskillful decisions. So in sitting, I invite you to let your posture be an attitude that you are cultivating a field. And so when I sit, I'm usually I have a picture of mine kind of similar to that on the wall right there. In a compassionate sense, where and just sitting solidly. Other times I just simply consider myself an antenna, and that's just well grounded and receptive and in a fashion that I am just observing what I might, my narrative story might add to whatever might be coming to me, and how by the thoughts that might pass by and how I acknowledge what those are and what I might stick to or attach to or what I might be repellent to, and just how those thoughts and feelings might just generate other feelings that I respond to. what it might trigger. So when you bring attention to the feeling of breathing, or the feelings of sensations arising in the body, the kind of attention brought to what you are noticing actually transfigures what you are noticing, and it changes the object from something that is seemingly permanent to something that is more of a process arising and passing. You can't have a subject without an object. You can't have an object without a subject. So when a sensation arises in awareness, as soon as you contract around this and make it into a thing by labeling it and creating ideas around it, you've turned it into an object. And as soon as you turn it into an object, and you become a subject, and that's the ego responding to what processes. You are in relation to that object, and then there is separation. And then there is what we call dukkha, which is when things aren't quite going the way we'd like them to go. So in conversation, we're very quick to interrupt with our own story just by default and holding on to what's etched in our minds, from whether it's our experience of just living up to however old we are now, and or whatever is transcended through our ancestors. The degree to which we insist on our point of view has become more and more aggressive. The acceptable model has become the loudest and most intimidating response. It can usually be heard just in the tone of voice, an uncompromising stance with no room for opinion otherwise. And so there's no reverence really in forcing one's opinion. It's just a false sense of pride, is the outcome. So solution is going out into every day, getting off the pad and taking this practice into our daily lives. Deep listening and loving speech says, I care enough to express myself while respecting you as you are in this moment. I am listening to you as much as I am speaking. A mutual respect that opens the way to deeper conversation. This is an action of trust and love that brings forth a comfort to let expression flow from deep within, uninhibited by underlying fears and tension. A nourished guard enables you to fully participate in the frantic pace of the influence while studying, while sustaining the perception that you are not really in it, that you are well aware how worthless a spectacle may be, and what really matters to you is the peace of the inner self to which you know and always can find refuge.